106.7 The Fan. Excited to get to the Rude Guest Hotline right away and talk to our friend Tony Pauline, consulting editor and NFL draft analyst at Skeeta.com. Me and Tony go way back. I guess it was the 2016 draft. I always give Tony credit when he comes on with us. He was the only dude I believe I saw back then that had Deron Payne going to the then Redskins, 2018. And he nailed that joint with the 13th overall pick, which isn't easy to do. Tony, what's up, dude? How are you?
I'm okay. Thanks for remembering that. They're few and far between. Everybody always remembers the misses, so thank you.
That mock draft stuff is hard, man.
Yeah.
I want to start. You had a story, I believe, yesterday about the Terry McLaurin situation here in Washington. I know you're talking to folks all over the league and on the agent side. Where do you think this thing is with Terry and the Commanders?
Well, I know what people told me. And, you know, just to go back, more than a year ago, before Commanders opened camp, I talked to people, and they told me how those in the Washington building were very excited. You know, they weren't looking over their shoulder in fear when Daniel Snyder was there. They were looking forward with excitement. Why do I tell you this? Because I went back to those same, and that was right on before camp even started, and I think it surpassed anyone's wildest dreams last season. I went back to those same people just to get an idea of what they thought was going to happen with McLaurin. And they told me that they think it'll get done. It may not take all that long. They said they're looking at it's probably going to be a 2 to 3 year extension on top of the 2025 contract. They'll probably not bump up the 2025 contract. They will give him a lot of guaranteed money. They said they told me that the Courtland Sutton signing earlier this week should help expedite it because that is, you know, a contract that they can point to. Everyone told me that they feel the sticking point could be if McLaurin is demanding more than $30 million a year. They don't think he's going to get a DK Metcalf-type contract, and $30 million may be the high-level mark for McLaurin. You know, primarily because of his age. But the Commanders have to be careful because they've got a good thing going on, and McLaurin has been nothing but an outstanding receiver for them. Obviously, they got a tremendous young quarterback. You don't want to kind of break up that rapport that's between them. But everyone I talk to seem pretty confident that something will get done sooner rather than later.
You know, that part right there, everybody talks about who has the upper hand, basically, or have the, you know, the clout, basically. And I think when you just said that, you don't want to mess this thing up with your young quarterback. So that kind of puts pressure on them as well, don't you think?
I would agree with you. I think that, you know, McLaurin had, you look at the rest of that receiver lineup, you look at the depth chart at receiver, you even look at the depth chart at tight end. I mean, Zach Ertz is a little bit older. Deebo Samuel, I mean... You know, is he a true number one? They use him in a variety of ways. Noah Brown's a nice complimentary receiver. You hope Luke McCaffrey, you know, can take the next step. They brought in Michael Gallup, but it's basically Terry McLaurin and everybody else. And you really, it's been Terry McLaurin and everybody else with that, in that Washington receiver, Washington Commanders receiver room, almost since the day he was drafted. So, you know, there's going to be some restrictions. I don't think he was, when he was drafted, he was a little bit older as a rookie, a 24-year-old rookie. So the age plays into it. I think they want to come to a happy medium, but I don't think they're going to want to break the bank for Terry McLaurin.
It's going to be interesting. I'm curious what you think, if anything, the Courtland Sutton deal in Denver impacts the Terry deal.
Well, I think Sutton got a deal that was they were happy with that, the 4-year deal, all just under $25 million a year. But again, it's something, you know, McLaurin's people will look to the DK Metcalf contract, and the Commanders will look more towards the Courtland Sutton contract, and they'll have to find something in between, very likely. I think it's good for the Commanders and even McLaurin that Sutton signed that deal because it's, you know, it's another marking point. It's another something else that they can rely on. I think the Sutton deal is sort of the floor for McLaurin.
Oh, okay.
For me, I think I get that Terry wants to get to 30 in AAV, but I think guarantees are the biggest driver and should be the biggest driver. And for me, if the guarantees get up over $50 million, even if that means some of this year's money gets converted to guaranteed money, so say it's 26 times 2 and then you add 10 more guarantees here, like, shouldn't that be what's more important than the AAV?
Well, I said that in my – I didn't say it exactly the way you said it, but I did say in my in the article he's looking for guarantees and security, especially at, you know, at his age, right, because he's going to be a 30-year-old receiver. So I would agree with you with that philosophy. Yeah, you know, I think for him at his age, something that could take him maybe potentially to the end of his career, you're looking at the guarantees versus the, you know, the headlines of the annual payout. And I stated that gently in my article. They'll be looking at, you know, they'll be looking at something with, or they'll be looking at something to give more guarantees and security, you know, as he comes to the eventual end of his career.
Totally. I think you get up over 50, you get up over 50 million guarantees on the table, and you're about to turn 30 in early September. It gets hard for me to think that deal doesn't get signed. We are talking with our friend Tony Pauline here, NFL draft analyst and NFL reporter for Sportskeeda. Tony, want to zoom out a little from the Terry stuff. What are you hearing around the league just about the Commanders this fall? I mean, there's a lot of excitement surrounding this team. Last year they kind of were an unexpected force, but now it seems like the whole league's pretty high on them.
As well they should be. I mean, they've got – and again, I go back to the articles I wrote, you know, in early July of 2024, they got the right people in place. And I'm not talking about the players on the field, the owner, the general manager, the people in the front office, the coaches, the player development people. So they've got the, everyone was high on the people, you know, that they have in place. And the fact is, you look at the offseason moves that they made, trading for Laremy Tunsil, trading for Deebo Samuel, you know, bringing in Von Miller. You know, they expect to win this year, and people think, especially with Jaden Daniels and just the attitude that he gives off, you know, Jaden Daniels, you can tell he's not satisfied. He wants to get better. So everyone expects them, you know, to take the next step. I guess the only problem is, or the only bump in the road would be the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, are the Eagles the same team they were a year ago? Are they better? Do they take a step back? The fact that the Eagles play in their division, everybody expects the Commanders to be a little bit better, but the Eagles loom large in that division.
For
when
sure.
You look at the overall thought process of this football team, how has it changed? Because I know before it wasn't very good, and in a matter of, what, 2 years or shorter, people seem to look at it a little differently. What are you hearing?
Well, that's it. It's the culture, and the culture starts at the top with the owner. I mean, again, I hate to be redundant, but, you know, before training camp last year, I wrote how people in the building, people who had worked there for a while, rather than looking over their shoulders in fear, they were looking forward with excitement, with enthusiasm. And, you know, it starts at the top with the owner, goes through. And again, you know, bringing in the veteran leadership like a Laremy Tunsil, like a Von Miller, it's not only the play on the field, but it's the leadership aspect in the locker room with these veterans that have been there before, that have been in deep into the playoffs before. That tells you a lot as far as the culture is concerned, besides the players on the football field.
Talking with Tony Pauline here on the Rude Guest Hotline. Of course, Rude makes the best HVAC products in the DM. Give Tony a follow at Tony Pauline, P-A-U-L-I-N-E. All right, I did want to go around the league a little bit here. Dallas, you've got whatever this Micah Parsons situation is that doesn't seem good. And then today they had so many fights that Brian Schottenheimer stopped practice and made not only players but also coaches run sprints. What are you hearing from Dallas camp?
Well, I mean, it's mayhem, as you would expect, for a Jerry Jones-run team. Somebody said something funny to me yesterday, and, it, you know, it's nothing I'm going to write, but it's something to keep an eye on. They said if the Micah Parsons contract situation isn't going well, expect him to start having back issues. Expect the back to start flaring up. And that is sort of a sign that he's not happy, or his people are not happy the way the contract is moving forward. I think the biggest problem is too many people, too much focus on the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, right now, what are they? A middle-of-the-road franchise? You know, if it was another team in another city, people, the amount of focus on them would be fractional. So I think that it's, you know, there was questions when Schottenheimer was elevated to head coach. It's typical, I think, of what we've seen with Dallas literally the past, what, 5, 6, maybe 7 years, and I don't think it's going to change anytime soon.
Yeah, man, watching it all, seems like Jerry's just lost his fastball. Like, he used to be so endearing even when he kind of made comments that came out of right field, and now it just seems like everything's in right field, and there's not the endearing side of it. I did want to keep it going, Tony. The Niners are a team that, you know, been to 2 Super Bowls in whatever the last 5, 6 years. Last year the injuries pile up, fell back a lot, missed the playoffs. They get the Purdy deal signed this offseason. What are your expectations for San Fran this year?
Well, my number one expectation is Adam Peters would like nothing more than to get to a Super Bowl sooner than the San Francisco 49ers and potentially
the Niners
win a Super
them.
Bowl. So, you know, there's some competition there. You said it right. I mean, the injuries, especially on defense, hurt them last year. They went with another pass rusher. I think protecting Brock Purdy is going to be a premium. You know, when you look at that division, it's not – you're going to have the Rams there. What will the Seahawks be there, be with Sam Darnold this year? You know, the Cardinals, this is a make-or-break year for the coaching staff. I think it's there for the Niners, for the taking for them. It's just a matter of them, you know, staying healthy and trying to take the next step, you know, from where they were 2 years ago.
Last year, you want to ask something about
– No, go ahead.
Ben Johnson was the big story.
Yep.
And – now he's there in Chicago, and I don't know if things are going great or not. How well you think he's going to do up there? Because he has a quarterback that doesn't do stuff on schedule, and I think that's the toughest thing for a coach to get broken out of, a quarterback that's like that.
Right. Ben Johnson, who I think Commanders fans should be very happy that you know, he got off the plane and the Commanders got the right coach. Listen, you never know when a coordinator takes a head coaching job. Ben Johnson has been the flavor of the month for the past 3 years in the offseason. Everybody wanted him as his head coach. He decides on Chicago because they got the quarterback of his liking. Who knows if he's ever going to look back and regret that he didn't take the Commanders job with Jaden Daniels there. So much is dependent on the quarterback there, as well as protecting the quarterback. You never know with an offensive coordinator. They lost both of their coordinators in Detroit. Aaron Glenn is now coaching the New York Jets, and Ben Johnson's at Chicago. We will see. I think they're going to improve. They need to improve the running game. They need to protect Caleb Williams, and we'll see what the Johnson can do as a head coach. I'm not sold on it. I think that division with the Lions, with the Packers, with the Minnesota Vikings, who I feel has an outstanding young head coach, as shown last year, it's going to be a very tough division.
Yeah, man, I'm curious as well. A lot of it, you got to protect Caleb better, but Caleb's got to get on schedule, or at least better at it. And Ben Johnson seems like he's really trying to, like, assert himself, and I'm curious on the path there. But you mentioned Detroit losing both coordinators. Obviously, you get a lot of the biggest pieces back, and defensively they should get healthy. Get Aiden Hutchinson back is a huge difference maker. But with the Lions, I mean, Dan Campbell has created a culture up there that is second to none, and that team really seems to buy in. But Do you think that's another one seed type team, or do you think somebody else in the NFC could unseat them?
You know, he lost his two top coordinators. I think he should be able to replace them. I totally agree with you about the culture in Detroit. What we're seeing in Washington, Campbell has been able to build in Detroit after so many prior failures. Do I think they could be a number one seed? I think it's going to be tough with the two teams in the NFC East we just spoke about, the Eagles and potentially the Commanders. I mean, no one expected the Commanders to do to the Lions what they did last year. And I think when you look at it on paper anyway, the Commanders are a better team moving into the 2025 season than the Detroit Lions are right now, especially, you know, removed from last year's playoffs.
Yeah, for sure. And then flipping it over to the AFC, you've got the Chiefs, you got the Bills, you got the Ravens. What do you think about the Broncos? You know, that's a team that we don't talk about a ton here on the East Coast, but they were good last year, really good defense. Bo Nix showed a lot. Sean Payton obviously has a serious pedigree. Do you think – I mean, I think Kansas City has won that division like 15 years in a row or something. Do you think Denver
– Yeah, and I think that bringing back Cortland Sutton, you know, it not only helps on the field but shows the other players and everyone else that, you know, this team is serious about winning. I think with Sean Payton is – you know, he likes his players. You look at the draft, and they kind of went off the draft board and took players that weren't as highly rated, but they're Sean Payton type of players. I think that, you know, in a lot of ways, Denver is sort of a mini version of Washington in the sense that you got an excellent coach there. You got a young, developing quarterback. The thing is, you also have the Chiefs in that division. You got the Chargers in that division. I think the Chargers are going to be a little bit better. I think the Broncos will be an improved team, but I think that with the Chiefs and with the Chargers in that division, it's going to be sort of an uphill battle like we talked about with the Chicago Bears.
Talking AFC West there, I agree with you. I think another year for Harbaugh with the Chargers, the Broncos look good. What do you make of the Raiders who bring in all this leadership between Chip Kelly calling plays, Geno Smith's a veteran quarterback, Pete Carroll's obviously this masterclass competitor, head coach. But then you got this super weird Christian Wilkins thing. What is the deal in Vegas?
That's weird.
I think Mark Davis is a situation where whoever has his ear, that's the direction that he's going. Now, I heard there was a lot of praise for the general manager that they brought in. There wasn't as much praise as far as Pete Carroll's concerned. As far as Christian Wilkinson, that story's concerned, I wrote about this prior to the draft. I thought that they could potentially take Mason Graham because what I was told back in April and I reported was there was likely going to be another procedure needed on his foot. What I didn't report because of potential HIPAA issues, was that the Raiders wanted him to get that surgery back in April, and Christian Wilkins didn't want the surgery. He wanted to rehab it on his own. I think the recent story that came out is just fluff. It more had to do with the rehabilitation of the foot. We'll see how Geno Smith does there. Obviously, he had success in the past in Seattle. I just think that the Raiders, the problem is the owner takes advice from whoever he's listening to that day. That's why we've seen a lot of turnover in the coaching and the general manager. I don't think it's going to get any better anytime soon.
That's crazy. I mean, we've seen that here. When you got an owner that's a bit of a wild card, you never know what's coming
crazy
next.
Crazy things happen.
Not a lot of real quarterback battles around the league. You could argue there's two, and maybe not even really, but who starts for the Giants week one and who starts by, like, week 10?
I think Russell Wilson's going to be the starter week one. We're hearing great things. I'm here in New York, and we're hearing great things about Jackson Dart, but, you know, when it's 7-on-7, 5-on-5, it's very easy. But when you got 11 guys bearing down on you on the other side of the line of scrimmage, all of a sudden the dynamic changes. I think Russell Wilson's going to start in week one. I mean, Dable needs to win this year. Russell Wilson's going to give them the best shot. Week 10? Well, call me week 7. We'll see how the Giants are doing. I mean, if they're playing
right.
competitive football, winning football under Russell Wilson, they're going to stick with him. If it looks like the season's a dud and they feel Jackson Dart is ready, they'll insert Jackson Dart and see what they have, if they have anything with him moving forward.
It's going to be fascinating to watch. Tony, right, we'll have to do it again as we get closer, man. Thank you for the time.
All right, Tony. Take care, brother.
Thanks. Have a good rest of the weekend, and good luck to the Commanders moving forward. A lot to be excited about out there.
Thanks, right. Dude. Appreciate it. Tony Pauline, really, really good Twitter follow, at Tony Pauline, P-A-U-L-I-N-E, rather. Kind enough to join us via the Rude guest hotline. Rude makes the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. When we return, our guy Peter Rosenberg, ESPN New York, joins the program.
Grinding on my life.
Trying to track down our boy Peter Rosenberg. It's a busy man with a little baby, so we'll see if he's able to join us.
Yeah, little mama running thing.
B, talking with Tony Pauline right there, what do you think of what he said with the Raiders? Because the Raiders have been really interesting to me. Mark Davis inherited the team from his father, has a bowl haircut, eats P.F. Chang's all the time. You bring Tom Brady in as a part owner, and it seemed like Brady was kind of trying to run that thing right away. Then this year you get Pete Carroll, who's going to run things. Do you think those guys can get that ship going?
Nah, I don't know, but I don't know yet. I mean, I think when we look at Mark Davis is going to, he likes to stick his nose in the things when he doesn't need to. And the times where he needs to say something, he doesn't. Tony knows him a lot better, and he said that he listens to whoever's talking to him at the time. So if that's the case, he's going to be, you know, a guy with that type of money that did not earn it per se, where it was given to him and handed to him and inherited. They don't understand the value of it. You know what I mean? So they normally run things by the seat of their pants instead of the person that earns something and begins to go out there and make sure that they don't have to deal with it. They're going to learn from the right people. They're going to go sit down and talk to mentors and things like that. He doesn't do that. So I think it's going to keep being on again, off again, unless the coach comes in there and just try to do whatever the hell he want to do. Maybe good for a short period of time, but once he steps in and want to run things again, it'll start getting screwed up again. We saw it happen here, too.
I know. It's interesting because clearly Josh Harris, Mitch Rales, Mark Ein, like these dudes grew up here rooting for the Skins, rooting for the Burgundy and Gold, right? Harris calls his mother Mama Commander now, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think because those guys had built
other businesses.
Massive other businesses, and then Harris particularly like owns other sports teams. They know how to balance their fandom with running a pro sports franchise. And I think that's really vital. And honestly, I think you're kind of seeing it with the Terry stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd be shocked if Josh didn't say hello to Terry, wouldn't you?
Yeah, they ain't speaking.
Right.
I don't think there's anything about animosity per se to each other. It's about the negotiation, and negotiations are tough. I mean, I don't know why people can't understand that. They don't work good all the time.
Yeah, like it gets to be dicey at times. Watching, you know, the rest of the league get ready is always really interesting, and I'm fascinated kind of by this Dallas situation because these fights in training camp, you get a couple of them, it's not a big deal, especially if you get a couple of them over a couple different days. But if you get enough that you have to shut down – I also think in these joint practices. And next week there's going to be a whole bunch of joint practices, right? It's not just the skins and the pads. It's going to be happening all over the league. When you get these fights at joint practices, it's almost to be expected, that to the point where PR staffs talk to the media about what to expect in fights. But I think that Dallas situation just seems quite different in that you've got, like, ownership and management, unfortunately, whether they want to be or not, is a byproduct of ownership. So coaches, all of that. You know, when that stuff starts happening and you've got the team just unhappy because of, like, the way Jerry's just S-talking his own players, talking about Dak being hurt and CD missing time and, you know, Micah's going to play whether they pay him or not, like all that kind of stuff. It's just bizarre. Like that Dallas thing, that's a talented roster.
It is.
But they've had some injuries, and now the – B, you were in the
league. It's a talented roster without guidance.
Right.
And the person at the top gives the wrong people too much clout. We witnessed that right here. And at one point, you had a coach there in Jimmy who knew how to still lead those guys, and they won a lot. Ever since then, Jerry has controlled the guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah. With the fights in Dallas specifically, it seems like there were three in one day, and Schottenheimer shut down practice. What is reasonable fighting in practice, and when does it go over the line?
Reasonable fighting, it could be multiple push and shove, but if guys start swinging helmets and all, that's completely over the line. But here we go. If you start fighting, you know what I'm not going to do? Stop practice. You know why? Because the players will understand later on if I start fighting, you're going to stop. You're going to cancel practice. And guys will manipulate practice that way. What I would do, if you start fighting, start taking your ass and run around this field until practice is over, until I'm tired. But the rest of the guys, we're going to keep practicing. And if anybody else do it, I'm gonna find you, and you're going to run as well. See what I'm saying? You stopped practice, didn't you? You just gave them off. You know what I'm saying? So it's like coaches think a lot of times, oh, yeah, I'm showing you. I'm stopping practice. Who doesn't want to not practice right now?
Right.
If you – listen, all these guys out here, we got the right culture, the right mindset. If they started practice at 8 and Dan stopped it at 8:15, you think any of them going to be pissed off? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So he did them a favor. I would run the hell out of the person that's fighting. And if it gets out of line to where – listen, fights happen. Flare-ups happen. But when it becomes a distraction and I'm not getting my work in practice – then I have to make sure that you deal with some problems on after that.
What do you think for Detroit? You lose both coordinators. You lose Ben Johnson. And I think there are questions what he'll be as a head coach. But he's a hell of a play caller, mm-hmm. hell of a play designer. Aaron Glenn is a dude. Aaron Glenn is a motivator. You lose both those guys. You still have Campbell. You still have Goff. You still have Gibbs. You still have St. Brown.
I think having Campbell is the main thing. Campbell is the person who started all of that. Campbell was the person that started that culture and pushes it. And Campbell and the GM are attached at the hip. Those two guys think alike. So whoever is the new GM, offense coordinator, defense coordinator, they're not going to be Ben or either, AG. But they have to be able to be similar to those guys. You know what I'm saying? And I'm sure Dan, he brought some guys in, they are very similar to what he had before. Can't be exactly it, but it'll be close.
Elsewhere, dude, I am high on J.J. McCarthy. I think the Vikings, you still have Brian Flores there. That defense should still be really good. I think they can keep that thing going. Where do you land on the Vikings? Sometimes it's fun just to talk ball with the players.
I like the Vikings. I like them. But J.J. McCarthy was in an offense that they were run dominant.
Dominant.
And whenever they threw the ball, receivers were open. I need to see J.J. McCarthy be able to take the wheels of that thing because we know Jefferson wants the ball. Will he be able to get it to him consistently? And then they have Addison as well. You know, defensively, I know we talked a lot about Landfield's favorite quarterback last year.
Sam
in the
Darnold.
Playoff game. But, hell, that defense wasn't stopping nobody either in the playoffs. In the last two games, the defense gave up points as well. So, like we always talk about the quarterback. Oh, the defensive coordinators figured out a way. Offensive coordinator figured out a way against the defense. At the end of that season, Brian Flores' defense was getting gutted. Is he going to be able to get an upper hand on the offenses again? Or will what happened to them in the last two games they had last year, will other teams begin to go out there and try to imitate that and begin to, you know, duplicate what they did?
All right, I'm going to give you two each, AFC and NFC, better chance of going to the Super Bowl.
All right.
AFC, Texans or Chargers?
Ooh. They just got Christian Kirk, didn't they?
Yeah.
Who's now with the other receiver over there? If they have him, boy.
B. Mitchell Finley, 106.7 The Fan. All right, folks. This is not a drill. This is not a test. This is not make-believe. There is football on television tonight.
Yeah.
Tonight, 8 o'clock kick from Canton, Ohio. You know what's going to suck.
What?
So we're supposed to get a whole bunch of rain here, right?
I hope not.
Well, I think today we got – today, 100%. These storms are coming. You can feel it in the air.
Pass through. Come on. Wait until about 6:30.
You remember a couple years ago when the Hall of Fame game
was raining?
Yo, they had to, like, delay it for 2 hours because of weather?
If it does, I'm not going to be sitting there waiting for it.
I just looked this up. The forecast this afternoon in Canton, Ohio, showers and possibly a thunderstorm mainly before 4, then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 4. Chance of precipitation is 80%. If there's lightning in the air, they can't play.
Yeah.
So, 8 o'clock, but might be 9:30.
Well, you know, we're going to pregame just in case.
Yeah, I think we are.
Yeah.
Lance,
I just got a mysterious phone call, Landfill.
Yeah, Landfill.
You want to know who it was?
Yeah, who was it?
Are you telling me to get up and leave? When you look at your phone and it says JH, and I'm like, JH? And then the dude's face pops up, John Harbaugh.
Oh, nice.
I said, let me answer this phone. So he was calling me with his return guys. He wanted me to give him some words of advice.
I feel like you got to say no.
Nah, man. You know, John's my guy, man. So I told him, I told the guys when they think they've done enough work, they got to go out and do a little bit more. I told him, make sure you always hand the ball to the offense. And I said, listen to that dude you're talking to. I said, because he knows what he's talking about.
But
I gave Jalen Lane way more advice.
There you go.
And I meet with him consistently.
You give them some breadcrumbs. You save the steak for over here.
Yeah. That lamb chop that I got last night from Bataggio Brothers.
Now the Skins don't play the Ravens this year, so
preseason. Right?
Preseason. Yeah. Lamville, I did want to ask you. I'm going to ask a series of questions. B, what time did you get here this morning?
Me?
Yeah.
7 something.
Yeah. I got here about the same, maybe more like 8 for me.
Yeah.
I saw when Jeff arrived, right?
Yep, I did too.
And which of us is leaving first?
Jeff say his job is 8 to 1. Because he can't get up at 5 hours a day, because if they go over 50 hours in 2 weeks, then they don't get credit for it. I understand.
All right, that makes sense.
Getting credit for miles, I ain't working it neither.
Okay, that makes sense. I didn't know that aspect of it. All right.
But you know he would have got out of here anyway. But that's the way he developed that story to tell me. And I listened to him a little bit.
He's been working hard out here. But
He has been.
When we have to pack all this stuff up, third set of hands would be nice.
We got to pack this up today?
No, but we got to wrap it up tight with these storms coming.
Oh, that's
stuff.
Easy.
All right. We're all going to make a pick tonight. What is the – I know one bet I want to put in, the under on – Trey Lance versus Hendon Hooker. Give me the under. I don't even know what the number is, but I'll go under on the Hall of Fame game.
Give me Hooker.
Whoa, dog, pause.
I say give me Hooker, not a Hooker.
Good thing you cleared that up. All right, so the total tonight is 33.5, and the Lions are favored by 0.5. B said give me Hooker. Do you mean like his yardage total?
just him over Trey Lance.
Trey Lance, all right, so Trey Lance is at 118.5 passing yards. Hendon Hooker at 99.5.
I'm going to go with Hendon Hooker.
Okay. What about you, Landfill? Anything you'd like in the Hall of Fame game?
I actually think the Chargers are probably going to win.
Taking the half point?
That's correct.
Okay. Landfill's taking the Chargers. So
the
far,
other Harbaugh.
I took the under. B. Mitch took a Hooker.
No, I took Hooker, not a Hooker.
Hendon Hooker.
Yeah, Hendon Hooker, not Hooker. A Hooker, like you said.
Landfill prefers Herndon Hooker. what about White Brian? Is he still there?
Keandre Lambert-Smith, over 31.5 receiving yards.
Warrior. Just why you took him? Because he had three names?
No, he's from Auburn.
Oh, he got to suck.
I'd also like to take Kyle Allen rush yards over. If any degenerate out there can find the backup quarterback in the Hall of Fame game's rush yards total, let me know. I'll take the over on that.
35.
Whatever it is, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to turn my television on and watch football. That's a glorious sight.
I'm going to do that, too.
It's a glorious sight, man.
I love it.
Tomorrow, we believe, will be the vote for RFK Stadium. I guess maybe it's the first vote. I don't know how these folks operate, but that is a huge, huge deal.
Oh, yeah, and Landfill told me he was buying us lunch tomorrow.
Oh, shout out to Landfill. I can't wait. Ruth Chris, Landfill?
That's not happening.
I'm not going to be in Ashburn.
Jeff, if you're listening, reach out to our guy and see if we can get that food from that spot.
We're not going to be in Ashburn either, Landfill. We're going to be in the prison tomorrow, cell, food. Baby.
Oh, that's horrific.
So then you will buy lunch,
okay,
right?
Okay, well, if we get lunch, you get none.
Bama. That's all right. I'll take that.
Grant and Danny coming your way next. Thank you to everybody that listened to the program today. Thank you to Lou Holder for joining us.
Jeff,
thank
reach you out to Che.
Tony Pauline for joining us. Thank you for Toby Altizer for joining us. Break down that Kyle Finnegan trade. MLB trade deadline is at 6 o'clock. What will we find out before then? Stay tuned to Grant and Danny. We'll have all that breakdown for you. Thank you to everybody that called in today. Fun show. Be safe in these storms. Sure feels like they're coming. If you made it this far, I owe you a cold bottle of water.